Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Figgy, let's hit him big time.
Because it's Taco Tuesday!
Houston, let's get in the loop.
The question is, how do the people feel about this? 713-572-4610. Shout out to all the loopholes. If you listen, you are a loophole.
With John Lopez and Landry Locker, you're in the loop on Houston's Sports Leader. Sports Radio 610.
On to Baltimore. Week one has concluded. It is on to Baltimore. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. OG had the scouting glasses on yesterday. 20% of the Texans' remaining opponents were on the screen yesterday. They played the Titans twice. They got the W. It wasn't pretty, but they got the W despite missing three field goals and an extra point. And you had the Pittsburgh Steelers, who also get the W, 26-16 over the New York Giants. So we got a little taste of what's to be expected from the Houston Texans moving forward. Were there any big takeaways during yesterday's doubleheader? Which, by the way, there should be more of those.
Yeah, that was a blast to be able to watch those. A little bit cut into my sleep time, but that's okay. You got to take one for the team once in a while, right? My big takeaway is, well, two. And I know we'll dig into these at some point. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be a problem on defense. They're going to be a big problem just because of the pressure they can put on you, the way they can stop a run, all the things that they do they fit perfectly against what the Texans do. The second one is, and I think you actually tweeted this, and I couldn't have agreed more. The Tennessee Titans won ugly, and they did it. They toughed one out despite some bad mistakes. And you know, those are the kinds of games that when you win them, your season just tends to turn out better. You know, so it was a little bit unnerving because we know the Titans are going to be good anyway. A lot of people have them as the favorite in this division. I think when they sneak out a win like that, it's going to be one that at the end of the year you go, wow, that was a big win, even though, because they only won the division by a game, or they only made the playoffs by a game, or whatever it may be. So those are my two big takeaways. It's going to be a tough go to start this year with the schedule the Texans have.
Yeah, and I looked at the Titans game and I said, man, there's some problems.
Yeah.
But I also got to keep in mind they did go 10 games last year without making a field goal. So it's been a problem for a while, but you win games like that. That's how you win divisions. We've seen it here. That was a big takeaway. Also, Clowney looked pretty good. He looked a little bit gassed. I don't think when you miss training camp, it's ideal to start your first game in Denver. I do look at Pittsburgh and I see a defense that could maybe give this Texans offensive line problems if they continue to block the way they do. But I had no idea that we were going to talk about this offensive line in 15 minutes and Enrom was going to come up. But that's just kind of what happens when J-Lo gets those fingers going, and it is a Tuesday OG column day. I also wonder, as Baltimore comes into town, I wonder if Lamar Jackson, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I wonder if Lamar Jackson is actually going to be 2 weeks into the season the best quarterback the Texans face in 2020. And I know Pat Mahomes, we put him on a pedestal, but the more that Lamar Jackson continues to do what he does, specifically in the regular season, which is when you're playing him, the more I wonder if the Texans are actually going from Pat Mahomes to a quarterback that's more of a threat in the regular season. Here is Nate Burleson of NFL Network talking about the greatness of Lamar Jackson, the quarterback the Texans will be facing this Sunday at NRG.
If you told me that Lamar Jackson was the most complete quarterback in the NFL, I would agree.
And before you say, hey, wait a minute. I mean, he can't really throw that well. He can't really throw like Pat Mahomes. Do we forget that he led the league in pass touchdowns last year with 36? There's not another quarterback in NFL history that can run like Lamar. Week one, 3 touchdowns, effortlessly. Didn't throw a pick. He did this last year as well. So now the defense that comes in and say, all right, guys, we're going to have to back up and play zone so we can drop guys into coverage. Lamar's going to do what we're seeing right here. Take advantage with his legs. Lamar Jackson is the most complete quarterback in the NFL.
I mean, he may well be. Patrick Mahomes has the big win and also has an MVP, and that's the discussion. Patrick Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson at the top of the heap right now. But that's not a crazy idea to say that this is going to be the best QB you face all year.
I mean, I think we might be facing, I think if it were the postseason, obviously Lamar's postseason record is not good. It's not favorable. We see the stats all the time. But when it comes to the regular season, this guy early on in his career is one of the best regular season quarterbacks we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. We've never seen anything like it. So you're not playing him in the playoffs. You're playing him in the regular season. But I also wonder if maybe the Texans have an advantage that I'll lay out for you in 4 minutes. You might hike your leg all over this. I know John McClain's going to come in and hike his leg at 11:20. But I want to ask you if this is a potential advantage, and if it is, if Bill O'Brien's going to be able to take advantage of it. But before we do, speaking of Bill O'Brien, the coach's show is every Monday at 5 mm-hmm. o'clock. It's when Bill O'Brien basically gets a chance to think about what he said at the podium. And he gets a chance to give more in-depth answers to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. Here was Bill O'Brien talking about the Baltimore team coming to town that, by the way, gave you the biggest loss that you had all of last year, the last time you faced, and they're coming to your place now. Here's Bill O'Brien talking about the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, and all his weapons and the challenges they pose for his Texans team.
Yeah, I know they have a great scheme. Lamar makes it very difficult because he's not only a passer, but he's like a running back. I mean, and he's got great speed, great change of direction. So it's a very difficult assignment. But we need to have a great – one of the things that's really important this week is our scout team's got to give a great look. We have to get a good look at the blocking schemes. They use the tight ends in unique ways. And obviously it's a very unique package. So it's like getting ready for – in some ways it's like getting ready for the wishbone, you know, back in the day. So you've got to do a lot of – assignment type football. You have to play very disciplined football, and you know, it'll be an important part of the week is our look team giving a good look at what they do.
Man, if this is like the wishbone, you're in for a rude awakening whenever they start throwing the rock.
He's Jamel Holloway then.
And I hope he's not serious.
He's James Street.
About that. Yeah. Shout out to James Street, the great James Street, former Longhorn quarterback. But the one thing that Bill O'Brien does have as he prepares for this team, and I don't know whether this is an advantage or not, he has a head start. And John Harbaugh brought that up yesterday when he met with the media types in Baltimore. The Texans do have a head start. They got a significant head start on the Baltimore Ravens. And here is John Harbaugh addressing his team's win over the Cleveland Browns and the uphill battle, quote, that they're facing against Bill O'Brien and his coaching staff.
We're very pleased with the win. Thought the guys played really hard. We can play harder. There's no question about that. Thought the guys played with real physicality. We can play with more physicality, speed, all those things we'll be seeking to improve upon, and we'll have to as the season goes on. And then we'll start our preparation for Houston. They've had a couple extra days. They played Thursday night, so they've been working on us all weekend. We understand that. We're just going to have to hit the ground running here.
Can a head start be an equalizer for an inferior coach like Bill O'Brien? Do you think that a head start, a 3-day head start, is significant enough for Bill O'Brien to be able to take advantage and maybe equalize the matchup that we're going to see Sunday at NRG?
I think it can. I really do. I mean, it's just more time in the film room. The reason I'm hesitating a little bit is you don't want it to be, you know, what do they call it, when you paralysis by analysis. You don't want to overthink things. But sometimes with a guy like with a guy like Lamar Jackson, it's okay to try to overthink things. You got to come up with something that no one else has found in a way to try to attempt to stop him. So I think it can be a little bit of an advantage. Absolutely. I'd rather have it than not.
Could I interest you in some stats?
Hit me.
I went to the lab and I did some stats because Bill O'Brien, he's been the coach for the Texans 6 years. This is his 7th year. His stats, the first 2 weeks into the season, in week 2, he's 4-2. So Bill O'Brien has won four times. He's lost two in week two. After a week one loss, Bill O'Brien is 2-2, and he's a combined 6-7 in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Hmm.
So 2-4 is his record in openers, or 3-4 is his record in season openers.
Yeah.
But he's 4-2 in week two, and he's one game under 500 in the first 2 weeks of the season. We'll go back in time and remember all of these games, because
right.
I think it's going to be an interesting case study. We'll have a little Fitz magic, a little Hoyer mallet, a little Tom Savage over Deshaun Watson. But Bill O'Brien is 4-2 in week two matchups. So we'll see what happens. 2-2 after losses. But he's been pretty good in week two once he gets the ball rolling, once he gets a tape, once he gets a little bit of a grasp of what his squad is about. Now, this is a little bit different than what I'm sure he's used to. He's never had more difficult matchups in the first 2 weeks, but he's been pretty good in week two.
He's just been pretty good at, you know, turning those frowns upside down and responding to a tough, bad loss, or even just a loss with a good performance. But this is the ultimate test here. I mean, they're not favorites at home. In fact, they're a touchdown underdog.
Seven.
At home. And so this is his toughest test yet. And every advantage you can get, you take it. And if those extra couple of days help, good.
The thing about this game is that I think this is a game where you could completely erase any of the negative thoughts you have about the Kansas City Chiefs in that game. If you do beat Baltimore, because right now I think it's just accepted. I think it's common sense. I think there's context clues to where you look at this Texans team and you say they're not in the upper tier of the AFC. And there's a lot of people who even say, well, they might not even be in the second tier of the AFC. I know Peter King had them lumped in with like eight other teams in the third tier in the AFC. If you show you can beat the Baltimore Ravens, then that changes a lot of things. Much like last year when we were drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit when the Texans beat the Kansas City Chiefs in week six, this win against this Baltimore Ravens team with how you looked against the Kansas City Chiefs, it would change a lot of things. It would bring some excitement, and I think it would bring a peace of mind to Bill O'Brien, because you talked about this yesterday after we heard him talk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he's feeling it, but it does feel like he's the tension is up a little bit more compared to what it was against Kansas City. And we've seen the teapot explode. A loss in Baltimore heading into a matchup in Pittsburgh, we could see Bill O'Brien go back to his old ways, and we could see a very pissed off King Bill.
Plus, you don't want that trend, that 0-2 trend to start the year. I mean, that could get very problematic. And we started this show with, you know, talking about the Steelers and how their front seven, their front 11, for God's sakes, their defense is legit. How they can cause problems for some of the Texans' strengths, that namely, getting pressure on the quarterback, stuffing the run. They're the next game. You know, if you go 0-2, you're staring 0-3 square in the face.
Yeah, I think some wins mean more than others. Starting out 0-2, I don't think it would be the end of the world, but if you do beat the Baltimore Ravens, there's going to be a lot of excitement around here. I think the football team's going to be more confident, but I'm not saying that I would hold my breath and bet on that. It is Tuesday here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610 on to Baltimore. John McClain's going to join us at 10:40 from Kansas City to your radio. We're going to have some leg hiking with him at 11:20. A couple concerns he has about the Texans, whether those are trends or just Kansas City problems. But coming up, I did not think this was going to come up today. I get up, I go to the fridge, I get my smoothie, I get the early edition of the John Lopez Sports Radio 610 column. I open it up, I'm reading it, and I spit my smoothie all over the damn table, because John Lopez is not only talking about Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby and the job they've done, but he brought Enron into the equation. I promise it'll make sense. We'll discuss next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby, they've done a lot of work. They've done a lot of work here in H-Town trying to make this team
better. Really blessed.
And the OG John Lopez, as he does every Tuesday, wrote a column for Sports Radio 610. And I can't believe the final word of this column. I really cannot. The final word of this column was Enron. John Lopez, explain yourself because you got some serious explaining to do.
All right, so it's on sportsradio610.com. B. Scott is posting it as we speak. And so the thought occurred to me to mention this yesterday because we're talking about the offensive line and hasn't exactly been a good return on the investment. All right.
I mean, the yardage was the same last year. You still allowed 44 sacks. Yeah, it hasn't been good. For everything you've invested, it has not been good.
So you remember when Enron, when they were telling us.
I can't believe this is happening.
I mean, the world was bullish on Enron. The planet, literally planet Earth was bullish on Enron. It was that powerful a company. But it was kind of a shell game. It was kind of a, not a literal Ponzi scheme. But it was in the same neighborhood as a Ponzi scheme. We found that out later, right? After millions of people bought in, millions of people believed that Enron was what it was all about. You put your money in Enron, right? You put your money in the offensive line. You put your money in the Texans' offensive line. That's what Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby have been telling us. That's what they've done. And here's the most important part. They can legitimately be criticized and not have much of a defense on every other move they've made in the last year. Jadeveon Clowney, legit criticism across the country. All right, maybe they think they're right, but legit criticism across the country. DeAndre Hopkins, obviously legit criticism across the country and the sports world. Some of these other moves they've made. We've seen in a short sample size, is Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb really going to make up the difference of DeAndre Hopkins being gone? I mean, combined, the entire receiving corps didn't. So legitimate criticism there. You know, two first-rounders for Laremy Tunsil. That's when it gets a little bit of a gray area because that's a legit lot to give up.
Don't forget the second, too.
And the second. Yeah, that's in the column. I typed it in. I just forgot to mention it right now. But at least they had this. At least they had this that they could sell us. We're protecting Deshaun, man. It's all about Deshaun. We're going to spend. We maybe even are going to overspend because we have to protect Deshaun. It's all about Deshaun Watson. Laremy Tunsil, two first rounders and a second rounder and the richest contract a tackle has ever received. Nick Martin, your guy.
Huh.
A three-year extension last year for $18 million guaranteed. They spent a first rounder and a second rounder on Max Sharping and Titus Howard. Zach Fulton even reworked his deal and earned $5 million in guaranteed money. So they're saying we're spending and spending and spending. You want to invest in the offensive line. It's going to be a giant payoff. We're bullish on the offensive line, just like the planet was bullish on Enron. Here's the deal. The returns haven't been that good. And if they continue, haven't been as good as we thought they were. And if they continue that way, this thing's going to blow up. I mean, you said it yesterday. You gave me the idea to write this column. When you said, tell me what you said. If this doesn't work.
If the wide receivers don't pan out, you can move past it. You can move past Brandon Cooks after the year. You can move past Will Fuller. You can figure that out and see how you want to handle that. But with all the time and money you have invested in the offensive line and with how their production is connected to Deshaun Watson, that's a fireable offense. Everybody in that building should be fired if this offensive line isn't good.
So they told us flat out. They've been saying we're prioritizing the offensive line. We're investing heavily in the offensive line. Sure, we may have gashed the draft. We may have, you know, hindered Deshaun Watson's complimentary pieces. But, hey, this is money well spent. Well, is it? I mean, let's talk about the opener, okay? They gave up four sacks. Four sacks and at least two others that I saw. I know I haven't gone back to rewatch the game yet. I usually do that on Tuesday or Wednesday. I haven't gone back, but I think at least two other plays where Deshaun prevented a sack by scrambling for past the line of scrimmage. So potentially six sacks, but four for sure. They also
allowed Deshaun to be pressured, what,
43%? 42% of his dropbacks he was pressured. This is the offensive line doing that. All right? and the Pro Football Focus grades. All right, for what it's worth, Laremy Tunsil's the only one that graded at least 70%. I think he was right at 70.4%. The entire rest of the offensive line, 52, 54, 53% on Pro Football Focus grades. So it made me go, all right, well, maybe that was just a bad game, right? So I went back to last year. The last three games this line has played, when they're supposed to be coming together after a year together, against the Buffalo Bills in the game they eked out, thanks to Deshaun Watson escaping pressure, by the way. Let's remember that. Deshaun Watson escaped pressure to win that game. Incredible pressure and incredible play. They gave up seven sacks, Landry. This offensive line gave up seven sacks in the playoffs against Buffalo. The next week, after Deshaun bailed their asses out in that one, five sacks to the Chiefs. So this offensive line, are we sure that the investments are paying off? Because it doesn't look like it.
Well, last year, I think you were top 10 in the league in allowing sacks. But you always hear, you know, well, Deshaun holds onto the ball too long. He also saves you from giving up more sacks. Yeah. Let's be honest. And the other thing about Enron, as you talk about Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby in the offensive line, and you link it to Enron, is a lot of the stuff coming out of Enron from Kenneth Lay and a lot of the other guys, there was just BS. There was always spin. There was always something. Here's Bill O'Brien yesterday on the Bill O'Brien Show at 5 o'clock talking about the offensive line, which gave up 43% pressure to Deshaun Watson. They gave up how many sacks?
Four.
Four sacks. Could have been more. Here is Bill O'Brien Lay talking about the offensive line.
You know, the offensive line, again, like I've said every year, I thought they actually blocked well. There were a couple times where there was a miscommunication. Somebody came free. I think we'll clean that up, give the Chiefs credit. They did a couple good things on defense. But I think that our offensive line really, I thought their run blocking was really good. I think pass protection-wise, there were a couple things. But overall, you know, Deshaun had some decent time. And then, the other parts of it aren't always with the offensive line. 42.5%. You know, we had a hot that we missed, and we ended up taking a sack on that. That's not the offensive line's fault. That's, you know, the skill guys, they've got to do a better job. So, you know, it's not always on the line. So I thought the line actually played pretty well.
Why? How?
That's not true. That's not true. Let me give you another stat. On six of the pressures that Deshaun Watson took against Kansas City, he had less than 2 seconds to throw, according to Pro Football Focus. 1/1,000, boom.
According to your eyes, even. You were watching it.
But it was 1/1,000, boom. And he had to get rid of the ball. 42% of the dropbacks. That's not a good job. That's spin. That's investing in something. Look, we all hope we're wrong on this. I was the one that just a couple of weeks ago, going into the season, I'm like, you know what? I've got confidence in the offensive line because at least we have a sample size of them being productive. They've been decent running the ball, and they've had a few, you know, the sacks did go down from 65 to 44 for what that's worth. 44 is still not good, but Pro Football Focus also ranked this offensive line last year 20th in the NFL.
Not good.
That's the bottom half.
It's not good for three first rounds, 3 seconds, and all the money. Here is a little – I didn't know we were going to be able to dig this up, but here's a promotional video from the fake Houston Texans selling us on this offensive line and the organizational structure as a whole 1 week into the season.
It starts with good people, recruiting, retaining, motivating, creative people, intelligent people.
Tough, smart, dependable guys.
Dependable, tough, smart.
You know when you work for Enron, you're going to see the newest products.
The cafeteria.
The newest services. You're going to see the newest markets opening up, the newest ways of thinking about things.
We are very confident in how we operate on a daily basis, very confident thought process that goes into really everything.
Enron is a company. We want people to leave a transaction with Enron thinking that they've been dealt with in the highest possible way as far as integrity and truthfulness, really doing our business right.
And negotiate with Billy O, that's what I call him. It was actually fun.
Excited about where we are now with his structure.
When they think about Enron, I hope they think of innovation, a company that will be on the cutting edge of the changes in the industry wherever those changes are occurring.
The cafeteria.
It's a wild ride.
Enron Online will change the markets.
That is eerie. That's eerie how much they sound like they're selling the same stuff. And I, you know, I fell into it. You know, I was like, well, the line, you know, okay. And 20th isn't awful, but it's still bottom half.
It's not good.
But in your three most important
games. You can't
games,
invest that much because it comes when you're drafting an offensive lineman in the first round or you're paying him, it's preventing you from paying a defensive player and your defense gets bad. There's a snowball effect to it.
And your three most important games, maybe of the last year, you've given up 7, 5, and 4 sacks. And in the most recent game, 42% of the time when Deshaun Watson dropped back, he was under pressure. You're dropping a lot of investments into that offensive line. You're not getting the return. Enron.
It's the OG John Lopez. You can read that at sportsradio610.com. NFL Hall of Famer John McClain about to join us straight from Kansas City to your radio. Are stopping the run and blocking for Deshaun, are those just Kansas City problems or are those 2020 problems? Our first in-season visit with the legend next.
We're making the stories from outside the loop matter to you. This is Localize It, presented by Westside Lexus. You're in the loop on Houston's sports leader. Sports Radio 610.
Yeah, we need to you know, continue to work hard in practice. I think that'll come. I mean, that was their first live game together. No excuse there. But and there were some good things. I mean, Fuller had a really good game. Cookie had a couple catches. Randall Cobb, you know, so I think there were some good things in the game, but not enough, like you're saying. And so I think that Akins, you know, Fells, all those guys, David Johnson out of the backfield, those guys can really help us. And we just need to keep building rep upon rep in practice to really get better.
All right, someone brought this up. I brought up if the extra few days for Bill O'Brien, and shout out to Nuff Said, would be an advantage heading into the Baltimore game. I forgot, and I didn't take into account, that last year they had a bye week before the Baltimore game, and that one was a 41-7 blowout at the hands of the Ravens.
Okay.
So he had a week head start on John Harbaugh last week. This week, three
again,
days.
I'd still rather have it than not.
Yeah, but
doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, but John McClain joins us. He was in Kansas City for that loss. John McClain, what should we make of the Texans losing to the Chiefs? Part of you wants to say it was the Super Bowl champs, but failing to stop the run, failing to block the guys in front of them. Was that loss and the two things that I just mentioned, was that a Kansas City thing, or do you think that's going to be a 2020 thing for Bill O'Brien's Texans team?
Chiefs have lost 4 openers in a row. They've lost 5 of 6 in all those seasons other than 2017. They rebounded to win the division. And also, they've won 8 in a row after losses. The problem is, for them, they've never run into a next opponent as good as Baltimore. Baltimore has been great in regular season going back to when they were 4-5 in 2018 and went to Lamar Jackson. They're 19-3 over the last 22 regular season games. They've only lost 1 by more than 5. But all that, they still haven't been any farther in the playoffs than the Texans.
Yeah, no, you're right there. We talked about this in the last segment. Is the Texans' offensive line as good as we thought it was?
Well, first of all, let's be honest. It wasn't Laramie Tunsil, and it wasn't Max Sharping, and it wasn't Nick Martin. It was Zach Fulton, and especially Tyus Howard had a terrible game. Now, he's going up against two good – Fulton and him were going up against two good pass rushers, Frank Clark and Chris Jones. And Howard hadn't played since midway through last season, so I can understand him struggling. But he needs to be better in this one because now they're going up against Matthew Judon, who last year had 2 sacks, knocked down Watson 4 times, 3 tackles for loss, and a fumble recovery. So Howard has got to play better. And if Fulton doesn't play better, I put Snell Calamente in there because you can't have one side of the line letting down, the rest of the line. And some of that pressure was caused by Deshaun Watson. Deshaun holds the ball. And if I am Tim Kelly this week, I want to get rid of the ball fast. I want to control the ball by running and throwing a lot of short, quick passes. And then when I get close to midfield, that's when I take my chances down the field. But they can't have Watson under as much pressure, whether it's self-induced or because of Howard and Fulton, as they did against the Chiefs.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to bring that up myself. This whole notion of Deshaun Watson holding the ball too long, I mean, number one, if he doesn't do that, you're kind of taking away one of his strengths. But here's my bigger point that I wanted to ask you about. Because, and I know it's not you. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, well, he holds on to the ball a long time. Lamar Jackson holds on to the ball a long time. Ben Roethlisberger holds on to the ball a long time. Patrick Mahomes holds on to the ball a long time. Aaron Rodgers holds on to the ball a long time. Isn't that kind of a cop-out on your offensive line?
Absolutely not. Lamar Jackson gets rid of the ball quick. Patrick Mahomes gets rid of it quick when he's in the pocket. Now, if he's rolling out, it's different. They have designed
rollouts. Well, that's my point. They both move around, and they both try to escape trouble.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when they're in the pocket, and they keep their eyes down the field. If you watch Watson, a lot of times, once he starts running, he's looking to run because that's a big part of his game. And I would think by now in his fourth season, you always got to be looking down the field. And Aaron Rodgers, to me, is and Russell Wilson are the best at that, but they're two of the best ever. So that offense, another thing that bothered me about the offense, they're down 31-7 midway through the fourth quarter. Instead of going to a no-huddle or rushing, they're letting the clock, play clock, tick down almost to the end. There was no urgency, and I'm guessing that's got to change. You know, at that point, I'd be going with a no-huddle, or I'd snap the ball quick because you can't be letting all that time run off the clock. But the thing that bothered me the most about the offense was they got behind so much, they couldn't run David Johnson as much in the second half. He and Jordan Akins. And Akins was on the field twice as much as Darren Fells. And O'Brien told us yesterday, if Akins is healthy, he's not coming off the field because he's such a good receiver and a great runner after the catch. So I imagine you're going to see him be a bigger part of the game plan.
Talking to John McClain here at Baltimore Week, heading into week two of the NFL season. A couple things you said about the offense that I feel kind of lost, and I think a lot of Texans fans do. You talked about how Lamar Jackson gets rid of the ball quick. That wasn't how he was being talked about coming into the league, and now in his second year as a starter, really third, I guess, but second full year as a starter, he's getting rid of the ball quick. You mentioned urgency. You mentioned seeing the field. You mentioned having the plays ready, and you mentioned needs to change with Deshaun Watson. What if this is just the way that the offense is coached here? What if this is just a representation of Deshaun Watson not getting the offensive coaching that he needs? And what if that is the biggest reason, not necessarily just because of Deshaun? What if he's just not getting the teaching that guys like Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes are getting?
Well, it could be. Greg Roman's doing a great job with Lamar Jackson, maximizing his strengths, trying to minimize the weakness. You see him still throwing touchdown passes to tight end Mark Andrews, who had a touchdown against the Texans last year. They haven't been able to cover Travis Kelce. Now they got one not as good as Kelce, but he's close, where the best way to beat them is what Tennessee showed, but it's not going to happen when Derrick Henry ran for 195 yards and Ryan Tannehill only had to complete 7 of 14 passes, but nobody else has got a Derrick Henry. And so I picked the Texans to start 0-3, and I still think they're going to be 0-3. I did not think they would look that bad against the Chiefs, where they're down 31-7 midway through the fourth quarter. And I'm guessing Baltimore's not going to beat them 41-7, but I certainly feel Baltimore's going to beat them thoroughly because they're a thoroughly better team.
All right, so what about defensively? Your big takeaways there. While they gave up pressure, they didn't get a lot of pressure on, and the secondary looked lost a couple of times.
Well, that's because they didn't have a pass rush. The run defense is the key. They were great against the run. The lowest they'd been in Bill O'Brien's first 5 years was 13th against the run, and that was in 2017 when they were 4-12. In 2018, they were third in the league, gave up 81 yards a game. Through the first 9 games last year, they gave up 84. They were great against the run. Then they go to Baltimore, give up 256. In those 10 games, counting Baltimore, through Kansas City, counting the playoffs, they're giving up 166 yards a game rushing over 10 games compared to 84. So why is it they're mostly the same players? They got the same coaches, and I don't know if it's strategy, but they're making too many plays. Now, Reader was there last year when they were terrible, so you can't say it's DJ Reader. And for whatever reason, whether it's coaching, the strategy, whether the players are not filling the gaps, you know, missing tackles, 20 tackles against the Chiefs. They were missing tackles over the last 9 games last year down the playoffs. So I don't know what the answer is on the run defense. I understand the pass rush. 2 players I would play more based on what I saw in the first game. I would play Jacob Martin more, especially against a fast quarterback like Jackson. He only played 18 plays. And the biggest surprise to me was P.J. Hall. Yeah. You know, they claimed him in September, and he came in here, let's see, I think he's been here less than a month, and he had 4 unassisted tackles, and he only played 17 plays. And Charles Amina, who started, he did not register goose eggs, and he played – he played 44 snaps and came up with goose eggs, and they were putting Carlos Watkins, Brandon Dunn. So I would want Hall to see if he can improve on that, and I would certainly have Martin on the field to chase Lamar Jackson around.
What was the reasoning behind cutting Angelo Blackson? And I'm not acting like he's God's gift to anything, but, I mean, he has played 40% of the defensive snaps the last 2 years. No, he wasn't the best pass rusher. He did get a sack in Arizona, so he has more sacks than the entire Texans D-line combined 1 week into the season. What happened with Angelo Blackson? He was also good on special teams. I know he blocked the punt against the Chiefs. Have you heard why they decided to get rid of one of their defensive linemen a week before the season?
Blackson, they're ready. They thought Amenihu was ready to start. Blackson played more snaps last year than any player in the NFL to not have a sack among defensive linemen. Then, of course, he goes to Arizona and gets a sack in the first
game.
He may never get another one. But he was a good run player, but they wanted Omenihu to play full-time, and Omenihu had 1 game at least, did not do a good job. And at some point, Ross Blacklock's going to be up there too. Blacklock only played 10 snaps because he's a rookie. But that's why with Blackson, he was strictly a role player, and they couldn't stop the run with him last year either, so what the heck.
I'm just confused. I'm not in pro football. Why do they think Charles Amenihu was going to be a guy that could stop the run and be a guy that they could replace a guy who was good against the run instead of just being a rotational guy?
I don't know.
At Texas. I just don't see how you put in the tape of him at Texas. He had some good times there, but he struggled to stop the run at Texas, and he was a 5th-round pick. I just don't see why you all of a sudden get rid of a guy that they loved in Angelo Blackson and think that Charles Amenihu is going to go out there and be able to help him stop the run.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask Anthony Weaver that when he's on the conference call on Thursday. And they obviously thought Charles Amenihu was ready to make that jump, mm-hmm. and they put him in there, and he didn't. Now, maybe he'll be better in this one, but, boy, if you can't stop the Chiefs. Last year, the Chiefs were 23rd in rushing. They had Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now they get 166 yards, and he gets 138. You knew the Ravens were going to run because the Ravens were number 1 in the league. But they only had 107 yards rushing in that annihilation of Cleveland because they didn't need to run a lot because Jackson was fabulous with 20 of 25 for 275 yards and 3 touchdowns. He was just so efficient and comfortable. You watch them and then you watch the Texans. There's no comparison.
Did anything look different to you in terms of offensive play calling?
No, I didn't see. Maybe, yes, they threw a couple of screen passes. I almost fell over and hit my head.
But, yeah, it didn't really strike me as, anything, going into some new pages in the playbook, that kind of thing.
Well, no, I didn't see that. I didn't expect that. I mean, Tim Kelly's been with O'Brien for 9 years. It's O'Brien's offense. It might be different play calls. But when you're behind, there's only – and you can't get the quarterback comfortable in the pocket, there's only so many things you could do. As Watson told me, they wanted to throw the ball down the field more. But to do that, you got to have just a little bit of time, and he was on the run. Sometimes because you got fast receivers, as Andy Reid said, speed's fine, but you got to know how to use the speed. The players have to know how to use their speed. Sometimes I think I'd take a 3-step drop and just throw it high and deep down the right or left sideline like a punt, especially when I get close to midfield, and let a receiver fight for the ball.
I want to get your thoughts on this. I know you were in the Zoom with B.O.B. yesterday. The great John McClain joining us here on Tuesday Baltimore week two in the NFL. This is what he said about the offense. Yes, the offense last Thursday in Kansas City. And I want to get your thoughts on it, John.
No, it's only one game, sir. No, we move the ball. I mean, we move the ball. It was too little too late, but no, we just need to, have a good week of practice and just keep trying to get better.
Is this, because against Denver last year where they fell behind four touchdowns or whatever it was this you suck too mother effer game. And this one, they fall behind 24-7. And then all of a sudden the defense kind of, you know, takes their foot off the gas and they get some mop up duty moving the rock. Does Bill O'Brien really, do you think, believe that the offense played good in Kansas City?
Well, no, he never said they played well in Kansas City. All he mentioned was after it was too little too late, and then they had two touchdown drives. No matter what we think about those two late touchdown drives, they're good for the team because they can come back and look at them and when they have their meetings and say, okay, here's what we did then. Now here's what we got to do now. And I always wondered, the turning point in the game was the end of the first half.
Yeah.
When they had a first down on the 33-yard line, Watson threw three consecutive incompletions, and Fairbairn missed a 51-yard field goal that's well within his range. And not only did they not tie the score or make it 14-10 at halftime, the defense, with two Zach Cunningham penalties, allows the Chiefs to kick a field goal to make it 17-7. And then when they need to stop the Chiefs on the first, second, and third quarter, first series of the third quarter and have a chance to score again, they let the Chiefs and Clyde Edwards-Helaire go straight down the field and make it 24-7, and the game's over. So that two series at the end of first half was catastrophic.
Catastrophic. Okay. NFL Hall of Famer John McClain with us here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. Let's move on to Baltimore, and let's look at the other stuff that went on in week one of the NFL. There are a lot of stuff, a lot of things that happened that impact the Houston Texans, including some crazy stuff going on in the South. We'll get the pulse of the general heading into week two of the NFL season next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.